Welcome to the Keep Texas Red Podcast, where we discuss the importance of true conservative values. Follow us on KeepTexasRed.org. And now, here's your host, campaign strategist and political commentator, Joseph Vargas.
And our guest today is an award-winning international journalist, educator, author, speaker, and consultant. He is a senior editor for The New American Magazine and an education writer for Freedom Project Media, among so many other qualifications. Welcome to our podcast, Alex Newman.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Alex, I think nobody will argue, you know, your research, your vast experience, and the books you've written, you show so much time that you've dedicated to this, but how did you initially decide to even get involved in researching and writing about, you know, and educating the public on what is national and international political issues?
Yeah, it's kind of a silly story. It's almost kind of embarrassing, but I got kicked out of high school. Wasn't an especially good student. Didn't really care about school, and I wasn't very good at anything. Math was not my forte. Science, none of that. But you know, some of my teachers had told me your writing was decent. So okay, well, I guess by default, I guess I better start writing. So I, after bouncing around the world for a little while, and realizing that everything was wrong. I didn't quite understand what was wrong, but it just was obvious that all the systems were wrong, the governments were wrong, everything was wrong. I ended up getting back enrolled in at the university. And obviously I went into journalism because I didn't have any other skills. So I just decided writing would have to be. And while there, I just started learning more and more. I ended up doing mandatory community service at a communist library. It's kind of a strange story. Yeah, it had to be some kind of 501c3. And I thought, hey, I'll stick it to the man by going to work at this like subversive library. And I picked up a book there about the Federal Reserve. And honestly, it was the conclusions of the book were terrible. They called for basically Congress should just nationalize the money printing. And, you know, maybe that'd be slightly superior to the monstrosity we have today. But it did contain a lot of really interesting information about how the Federal Reserve worked and why it was such a scam. And that got me researching the monetary system. Eventually, that was early on in the history of YouTube, before it was owned by Google, when you could still find good stuff on there. And I came across a documentary that the John Birch Society had made. I think I was 19 at the time, about the United Nations. And I had grown up always being indoctrinated with this idea that the UN was like the savior of mankind and it was about peace and stuff. And this documentary that the Birch Society had made was about a quote unquote peacekeeping mission in Katanga, a province of the Congo that had separated because they didn't want to live under a Soviet-backed dictator. And so the UN brought peace there by bombing their hospitals, raping their women, bayoneting children. And that was a real eye-opener for me. And that kind of got me started on this path of researching globalism and the elites and the deep state and the kind of horrible things that they're up to.
So that's where your interest started in researching and looking beyond what you just hear in the news or reading the newspapers,
Yep. As a kid, I really wasn't interested in much of anything except, you know, dumb stuff, having fun and stuff. It wasn't until getting into college and finding out about the Federal Reserve and the UN and stuff that I really, my eyes started opening. And then it was a long process. It took years and years before I finally like went through everything that I had learned as a kid, all the fake news, all the fake history and everything. I said, okay, is that real? Well, I guess I got to find out. That's really where the interest started, I think.
Now, Alex, currently it seems like we're at the verge of war with Russia over Ukraine. The media is taking a side on this, and even many elected officials seem to be salivating over war. What is your research telling you that is really going on with the Russia-Ukraine conflict?
Well, the globalists love war. The people who want to build what they describe as a new world order are very, very fond of war, and they say so. This is not me speculating. It's not even connecting dots. It's that I have their documents where they talk about how useful war is for subverting national sovereignty, for changing people's attitudes, for expanding the size and the scope of government. And we saw that all throughout history. I mean, we saw World War I completely just transformed society, right? They sent all the men off to go die in the war, and then all the women were forced into the factories, and then all the children were put into the hands of the government, right? Prior to World War One, most American children were still homeschooled, right? The children lived at home, and their mom taught them how to do stuff, and you know, this whole idea that the government should educate all our children, that was a rather novel idea at the time. And then out of the ashes of all those countries after World War One, we ended up with the League of Nations, and that was supposed to be the seed from which a global government would grow, except that the U.S. Senate fortunately had the foresight to see what a danger that was, and they overwhelmingly rejected U.S. involvement. Then we had a World War II, again, you know, a whole nations reduced to rubble. And what came out of World War II? Well, the United Abominations, the IMF, the World Bank, the Bretton Woods institutions, the European Union, which of course is the template for all these other regional governments that they're building everywhere. And in the 1960s, the U.S. State Department and the Institute for Defense Analyses, they commissioned a report by, of course, a member of the global elite, a guy called Lincoln Bloomfield from the Subversive Council on Foreign Relations. And in this report, it ended up being titled A World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations. He actually lays out that the fastest way to get from where we were then, a world of relatively sovereign, independent nation states, to where they wanted to be, a one world government, a world effectively controlled by the United Nations, was to use war, or the threat of war is actually the words he uses. War and the threat of war are the fastest means of transforming attitudes and getting around national sovereignty. So I think I actually predicted weeks before the war began that it would begin, and I put out a video for the New American Magazine, and I suggested that it was a very real possibility that it could break out into a World War III scenario where they might even, you know, launch some nukes or some sort of devastating cyber attack, something transformational, because they realized that crises are transformational opportunities. And you know, having a nice war in Europe would certainly solidify the regional orders, the regional governments that Henry Kissinger talked about as instrumental on the road to what he described as a world order. And so I think that's really what we're dealing with here. I don't believe for a second, and I know a lot of conservatives have started saying this. I think they're wrong, even many well-intentioned and well-informed people. But that Putin is some sort of hero and he's going to save us from the new world order, I don't believe that at all. I think Putin is very closely connected to these people. In fact, he calls Henry Kissinger his close advisor. It's his personal friend. He goes to New York and has dinner at Henry Kissinger's house. Henry Kissinger goes to Moscow, and Putin showers him with the honorary doctorate degrees and invites him over to the presidential palace for dinner. And if you look at Putin's actions, same thing. He's following Henry Kissinger's strategy for world order to a T, right? He's building, very few people know this, but he's building what he calls the Eurasian Union. It's kind of a resurrected Soviet Union, bringing in the former Soviet states. And, you know, Ukraine, of course, is a hotbed of deep state corruption. We've got all the children of the political elites. Obviously, Hunter Biden is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, it's a cesspool. But I think ultimately their objective with this war is to advance the cause of globalism. And we've seen that, right? As soon as Putin invaded, they said, oh, now Ukraine needs to join the European Union. Now suddenly Sweden and Finland want to join NATO. Now suddenly Switzerland, after you know, almost 300 years of neutrality, now, okay, we'll go with the European Union and we'll put sanctions on Russia. So they're really using this war as a catalyst to move the ball down the field for their one world order agenda.
On your research, have you found out any truth to the fact that there are some like neo-Nazis in Ukraine that supposedly Russia was targeting?
Yeah, I mean, there are neo-Nazis in Ukraine, but you know, there's so much more to this than meets the eye. There's one particular Ukrainian oligarch who happens to be Jewish, or at least he says he's Jewish, and he's back and forth to Israel a lot. And he's actually been one of the leading financiers of this Azov battalion that flies swastikas and stuff. So, you know, it's hard to know exactly what's going on. It's a very safe bet always to assume that the media is lying to you, because they always are. But yeah, there's Nazis in Ukraine. I mean, there's Nazis everywhere. The National Socialists. I mean, you could almost argue that a big segment of our political class in the United States is they're National Socialists. They may not openly espouse the racial nonsense, but they believe very much in the fascistic model of government, where corporate and government interests merge and where they regiment society. So yeah, there's Nazis in Ukraine. I don't think they're representative of the broader population or even the broader armed forces. But yeah, there's definitely Nazis in Ukraine, and some of them have actually been brutally pounding the ethnic Russians, the Russian speaking peoples in eastern Ukraine. And so, you know, on the surface of things, you look at what Putin says. The media never reports what Putin says he's doing. He says he's trying to denazify Ukraine. He's trying to protect the Russian speaking minorities in eastern Ukraine, and he's trying to prevent NATO from gobbling up another country and ending up closer to its doorstep. But you know, again, if you look at what's happening behind the scenes, I think that's what's much more critical. And again, this is another example of U.S. foreign policy causing a catastrophe. Nobody today is talking about the fact that it was the U.S. government, in fact, Bill Clinton, that told Ukrainians to give up all their weapons, right? Give up your nukes. They had 2,000 nukes. I think they were the third most nuclear-armed nation on the face of the planet. And then Bill Clinton goes over there and pesters them, just give all your nukes to Russia. Come on, if anything ever happens, we'll protect you, right? And of course, what happened? The Russians invade, and now they don't have any defenses. You know, do you think Putin would have invaded a nuclear-armed power? Probably not. So again, we have U.S. foreign policy producing directly a geopolitical catastrophe, and I think it's being exploited by globalists to the max.
Now, moving to Texas. In Texas, we currently have thousands crossing the border every single day. Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas seems to be okay with this. Border Patrol leadership seems to be okay with this. And Texas National Guard is saying that they're instructed not to push back, but rather to just process these people. And they're handed over to non-government organizations to then help them get anywhere across the United States. Do you think Biden and even these elected officials in Texas are allowing this for a reason? Is this part of the same globalist agenda? Or what are your thoughts on why this is being allowed?
There's absolutely no question in my mind that that's what's happening. The Biden administration basically rolled out the welcome mat. In fact, they were even running ads with funding from Soros and others down in Central America, telling people to come on up here. That you know, everything is free, open. You can come on in. You just walk right across the border. They're doing this deliberately, and it's part of the globalist agenda. They want to erase borders. They want to erase national identities. Because if you erase national identities, then all that's left is, you know, this one world mishmash. And so we've seen this happening in Europe. We've seen this happening all over the world. And it's very strategic. It's very deliberate. I was actually living in Sweden during their migrant crisis there, where the Swedish government just said, hey, anybody who gets here, as long as you say you're Syrian, you know, you have automatic permanent residence. And so now they're dealing with you know, population where something like a third, almost a third of the population is either foreign born or born to two immigrants. And so what happens? Well, we see what happens, right? You look at London is a good example. Brits are now a minority in London. Can you imagine being a minority in your own capital city? Same thing in Frankfurt. Germans are a minority in Frankfurt. And this is what's going to happen everywhere. And, you know, I grew up in Mexico. I grew up in Brazil. I grew up in Latin America. I don't blame people for wanting to come here. I mean, you know, I'd want to come here too. You know, America is a great country. It's based on great principles. But the people who are posing as humanitarians are anything but. And this was so clear in Europe too. You know, they blew up Syria, they blew up Iraq, they blew up Libya, and then they said, oh, look, your countries all suck. Hey, why don't y'all come to Europe and we'll give you, you know, free healthcare, and we'll get you money for an apartment, and your kids will get a good education. You know, how can you blame one of these people? Of course they're going to come, right? But the people posing as humanitarians here, I say it's like a pyromaniac burning down your house and then inviting you into your neighbor's house and say, hey, just help yourself to your neighbor's refrigerator. Like, sorry, that's not humanitarian at all. In fact, in any other circumstance, we would call that a criminal act and we would put you in jail. And that's what these people have done here. They bombed Libya to smithereens, and then they said, hey, why don't y'all go to Europe? They bombed Syria to smithereens. They fomented a civil war. And they said, why don't y'all go to Sweden and to Germany? You know, it's an atrocity what's happening. But I can guarantee you the border is wide open because they want it wide open. They can track just about anything. And just a few weeks ago, I was down at the border in Texas, and I had the opportunity to talk to a lot of top officials in the Trump administration. The head of Customs and Border Protection from Trump's administration, in fact, from 30 years, was there. Tom Homan, the head of ICE, was there, right? Mike Flynn, General Mike Flynn, the former National Security Advisor, and every single one of them said, look, this is orchestrated. This is engineered. It's not difficult to keep our border under control. Heck, we're keeping other countries' borders safe. We're helping Iraq keep their borders safe, right? And we can't keep our own border safe. It's very deliberate, and what they want is a mass importation of people who don't share our history, who don't share our language, who don't share our culture, because then eventually you wake up, and this is happening now in big parts of Europe. You wake up and you say, What do I have in common with all these people? We're not the same people. We don't have the same language. We don't have the same history. We don't have the same religion. We don't have the same anything. What's the point of having these arbitrary lines drawn around us and calling it a nation state? Let's just dispense with that, and we'll just have a European Union, and then eventually a one world order. So that's why they have the border wide open, and Mayorkas is doing it on purpose. Biden is doing it on purpose. And the congressional leadership is deliberately allowing this.
Now, in regards to the massive inflation across the country right now, the Fed recently increased interest rates, I believe, by 0.25%, which probably won't be enough to deal with the inflation. But do you think the Fed is purposely trying to destroy the value of the dollar? Or what do you see is really going on with the inflation currently in the United States?
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that the elites are trying to destroy the value of the dollar. The eventual plan, and I've been writing about this my entire journalistic career for 12 or 13 years now, the eventual plan is to replace the dollar as the global reserve currency with a truly global currency run by the International Monetary Fund. Again, this is not my speculation. I've got their documents where they talk about this. I've got their speeches where they talk about this. I've got a video of Obama's Treasury Secretary, Timothy TurboTax Geithner, because when he didn't pay his taxes, he just blamed it on TurboTax. I tell people, you try telling the IRS that you didn't pay your tax because of TurboTax and see what happens. And so I've got a video of this guy. He was at the Council on Foreign Relations. This is basically deep state headquarters here in the U.S. And he was asked by somebody in the audience about this communist Chinese proposal to move away from the dollar as the global reserve currency and to turn the special drawing rights issued by the International Monetary Fund into the true global reserve currency. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, well, you know, we're actually quite open to that. And the dollar plunged. So there's nobody stupid enough to believe that you could print trillions of dollars and shower it on your friends running the mega banks and showering it on, you know, the people that fund the congressional campaigns and the mega corporations and foreign governments and think that the currency is going to remain sound. It's absolutely ludicrous. And there's a lot of stupid people in the world, but the people making these decisions are not stupid. In fact, they know exactly what they're doing. And in fact, I think this Russia-Ukraine situation, to go back to that for a moment, I think that may accelerate the process of de-dollarization. You've got the Russians now saying, hey, well, you won't let us use SWIFT. We'll just join communist China's system. Now you've got the Saudis won't take Joe Biden's phone call and say, oh yeah, we'll take you on for oil, right? So, when they took the U.S. dollar off of gold, that last link was severed in 1971 by Richard Nixon. The only reason the dollar kept its position as the global reserve currency was because oil was bought and traded pretty much exclusively in U.S. dollars in international markets. Well, those days are coming to an end. It's engineered, it's orchestrated, it's going to be an absolute catastrophe for average Americans. But the elites, as usual, will be laughing all the way to the bank.
Now, Alex, I've been reading a lot of your work and your books for quite a while, and I've noticed that everything that you write about, you've always presented it with verifiable facts. But even though that you've done this, some of the stuff that you've wrote about has been labeled as conspiracy theories, you know, even though they were later proven to be real. So one of them was being the existence of the deep state. And you do have a book called The Deep State, The Invisible Government Behind the Scenes. So briefly tell us, what is the deep state? And what can Americans do to fight the deep state? And why do you think so many Americans still fail to see the evidence of its existence?
Yeah, good questions all. And so I think at the most superficial level, the deep state is kind of this entrenched machine, nominally headquartered in Washington, D.C., but also Wall Street, that kind of governs behind the scenes. And when people think of that, they normally think of like the entrenched bureaucracy and things like that. I go a step further. I say, really, we need to be looking at the deep state behind the deep state. The people that pull the strings of the entrenched bureaucracy, of the power players on Wall Street. And I name a number of organizations, and there are many of them. I chose for space reasons to focus in on a handful for the book, but the Bilderberg, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bohemian Grove, the Skull and Bones, the Trilateral Commission, and these types of groups. And I think those are the place where we really need to be focusing, because, you know, first of all, these people like to remain in the shadows when they're doing their evil deeds. And if they were brought out into the sunlight and Americans knew what they were doing, we could have justice, we could have accountability, and these criminals could not operate with this kind of impunity. Second of all, I think it's important to understand this because, you know, this is not random. They want us to believe that this is all just stupidity, that it's partisan gridlock. It's not. This is part of a plan. They have an agenda and they're implementing it strategically and very carefully. And third, you know, Sun Tzu, the great Chinese military strategist, explained very well in his book, The Art of War, that if you want to win every battle, you've got to know your enemy and you've got to know yourself. And right now, Americans unfortunately don't know their enemy and they don't know themselves, which, you know, if you use Sun Tzu's insight, that means we're going to lose every battle. And unfortunately, we have been losing every single major battle. You know, occasionally we'll hold them back for a year and delay their plans, but ultimately we're losing every battle in our fight for freedom and for protecting our Constitution and for protecting our nation for future generations. So we've got to understand these things. And, you know, I think more and more people are waking up. I was really encouraged during the final years of the Trump administration. The Monmouth University Polling Institute did a poll and they asked Americans about the deep state. And they found that 74% of Americans recognized that we had a deep state. Now, they defined it a little bit different than I would. They called it a group of shadowy, I think, government and military elites that are trying to secretly control national policy. But the fact that 3/4 of Americans recognize that that's what we're dealing with, that's progress, right? That it's what they're showing us on TV is not the whole story. So there is progress happening in that regard. I hope we're going to see a lot more because if we don't get that under control, we're going to lose our freedom. We're going to lose our nation. We're going to lose our families. We're going to lose our churches. We're going to lose everything. That's how high the stakes are. So we've got to get this under control. And I think step one is to educate ourselves on what we're really dealing with.
Now, Alex, in your opinion, how advanced is the process of government tyranny here in America? And what further infringements do you see coming soon? Or what kind of infringements do you anticipate?
Well, the tyranny is very highly advanced. I mean, we live in a society that's very unstable. We live in a society where you can have your life, your liberty, or your property stolen from you in an instant at the whim of a government agent. This is something that our founding fathers warned against. It's something that they intended. They did their very best to try to stop it from happening through the Declaration of Independence and then later through the U.S. Constitution. But unfortunately, we're there now, right? They can take all your stuff with asset forfeiture. They can show up at your house and they say, oh, I thought he was reaching for a gun, and they can blow your head off, right? I mean, we live in a society where our most fundamental God-given rights are at best very precariously protected. And we see, you know, our free speech is going down the drain. We see our gun rights every year. They're further and further eroded. Now Biden's passing all these new executive orders to come after those. We saw during the COVID pandemic how insecure those rights really were, right? Just out of nowhere, it seemingly from one day to the next, we suddenly lost all of our freedoms, even freedoms that we previously hadn't even thought of as freedoms that needed to be protected. Our right to have a job, our right to go outside of our house, our right to go shopping, our right to open our business, our right to go to a neighbor's house to you know, visit a dying loved one in the hospital. It wouldn't have even occurred to us that these were freedoms that needed defending, and they all evaporated in an instant. So that's the kind of danger that we're in right now. They can turn that back on at a moment's notice, and unfortunately, they've already realized that a lot of Americans will go on with that for a pretty long while. So we're in great danger right now as a nation. And I don't think we should sugarcoat it. I don't think we should be Pollyannas and, oh, everything's going to be fine. You just got to trust the plan. Everything's going to be great. No, it's going to take hard work and real effort if we're going to protect our freedoms. And right now, we're very vulnerable.
Now, Alex, what are your thoughts on the environmental social governance, better known as ESG, which pretty much forces companies to become woke by measuring their commitment to leftist social justice issues? Are you familiar with that?
I am, yep. And BlackRock's helping to bring it in. State Street and Vanguard, of course, are helping to push this. It is essentially a transformation of our economy away from what's left of the free market system toward a fascistic model. Right? In a free market system, companies are concerned about a number of things. They're concerned about the bottom line. They're concerned about shareholders and they're concerned about customers, right? That's the job of a company, is to produce something to satisfy the needs and wants of customers and to make money for the owners of that company. Those are the shareholders. And historically in market economies, that's what companies have done. They've produced things that people want and they've enriched their shareholders. That's literally the purpose of a company. In Nazi Germany, to go back to what we were talking about earlier with Nazis, on paper, you could still own your factory, but your factory had to do what the government said. And that's where this ESG is aimed at taking us, right? Yeah, you can still own your company. Yeah, you can still run your company like you want, as long as you do the things we want, right? The environmental nonsense, you got to pay lip service to the climate stuff. You got to give Al Gore money for carbon credits. You got to do the social stuff, right? You got to be woke. You got to have, got to spout off about the diversity. You've got to, all the rest of it. And then, of course, the governance, right? So this is a way of transforming what's left of our free market economy into a fascistic model where instead of worrying about making money for shareholders and satisfying customers, they're worried about, hey, are we doing our ESGs right so that the government's going to be happy and so that BlackRock and these other fascistic totalitarian companies are happy and are going to keep that money in there. So it's a very dangerous situation. It is literally fascism, and we have to be very careful.
Now, currently, a news media seems to be compromised with hidden leftist agendas. So what news sources do you recommend to our listeners to stay up to date on what's truly happening in our country and around the world?
Well, all the ones that I write for are good, and I write for them because they're good. I don't promote them because I write for them. I promote them because they're good, and that's why I write for them. So I'm the senior editor at the New American Magazine. Go to thenewamerican.com. You can get a subscription to the print magazine or... you can even just sign up for the free daily headlines. You get it in your email every day. We also have another good one is the Epoch Times, great newspaper. I'm a regular contributor there. My personal website, libertysentinel.org. I put up a nice eclectic mix of things there. And those are some of the good ones. Obviously, your show is wonderful, and so I appreciate that. And there's more and more good sources coming online now. There's a lot of good podcasts coming out, and you'll still get a lot of good information on Breitbart, and I even like to read InfoWars, Alex Jones's thing. There's a lot. Oh, WND is another good one. If you're in law enforcement, the Law Enforcement Intelligence Brief, which I write for, is phenomenal. That really is aimed at law enforcement executives, sheriffs, and police chiefs and things. But great publication if you want to keep up on law enforcement issues. So those are a handful of the ones that I would very highly recommend.
Now, in conclusion, what is your call to action for everyday Americans that are waking up to what's happening in America and want to help preserve our constitutional republic?
Yeah, there's so much to say here. I'll try to keep my remarks as brief as possible. But I would say first and foremost, you have to protect your children. Right. The way that they have advanced this far is by brainwashing and dumbing down successive generations of children in what they call public schools. They really should be regarded as indoctrination camps for hostile forces seeking to overthrow our country. You should not let your children be indoctrinated in there. And if that means homeschooling, if that means, paying the money and sacrificing the money to put them in a good private school, I think that's one of the most important things that an average American can do. Once you're educated yourself, everybody has a sphere of influence, your spouse, your children, your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers, whatever, try to disseminate that information, try to wake others up as well to the danger that we find ourselves in. But, as I said earlier, Sun Tzu gave that really good advice. You want to know yourself and you want to know your enemy. And Americans, unfortunately, have forgotten their heritage. We Americans as a population know very little about their history, about their founding documents, their form of government, how we got from there to here. It's an incredible story and people should learn it. And then you need to learn about the enemy. And finally, I'll say, we need a lot of prayer. God answers prayer. And I don't know whether, he's going to give America more time or not. That's above my pay grade, so to speak. But praying is critical, and getting your relationship right with God, and just getting involved in the political process. I mean, run for office or work with someone who's running for office. If you know somebody who's a good candidate for state representative or for mayor or for city council or for sheriff, whatever, get involved in their campaign. Help them knock on doors. If you have money, help fund their campaigns. Lots of great grassroots organizations out there as well. If you want to get involved, the John Birch Society is a really, really great grassroots, national grassroots organization. You get a lot of good information. You can work with other people across the country on concerted action. And just read. You know, I can't emphasize strongly enough the importance of reading. Readers are leaders, and we need readers to lead. We need people who understand history, who understand strategy, who understand politics, who understand all these things. Economics. I mean, it's just, you know, basic stuff that unfortunately your average American doesn't understand. We just need a reawakening of knowledge and true education. And I think, unfortunately, there's no shortcut. Everybody wants that silver bullet where we just snap our fingers and we're going to save our country. It's not going to look like that. It took us generations to get in this mess. And if we're going to fix it, it's going to take generations to get out. So start thinking over the long term. We got to be in this for the long haul. You know, don't worry so much about the day to day. Oh, we lost this political. Oh, Congress passed this terrible law. Yeah, okay. But the long game, right? We need to think multi-generationally. And just the most important thing is just get involved.
Alex, we want to thank you for sharing your insight, your research with us, and thank you very much for being on the Keep Texas Red podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor and a pleasure. Really appreciate it, and let's keep in touch.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Keep Texas Red podcast. Follow us on keeptexasred.org.